I'm confident that tonight's lesson will hold no surprises for anyone. It's a very simple lesson. It's a very important lesson. Acts chapter 2 and verse 42 reveals, among other things, that the early church was devoted to prayer. The text says they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and in fellowship, in the breaking of bread, and in prayers. These people truly believed in God. Many of them had seen Jesus. All of them had witnessed the miraculous element, the tongues on Pentecost, and no doubt had seen other evidences. All of them were subject to persecution for their faith. These were true believers, and they desired to talk to God. It has been said that prayer is the very breath of a Christian. It is a severe test of faith in God and in His Word. To the man void of faith, prayer is a vain cry in the wilderness with no one to answer. Or it's an extreme exercise in futility, simply a waste of time. But to a man of faith, it's an address to God who has the power to respond. It's the address to God who delights when His children come to Him with their petitions and with their supplications. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 through 11, Jesus says, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds. And to him who knocks it will be opened. What man is there among you who, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him?" Just a cursory glance at the New Testament makes it clear that the church was constant in prayer. Speaking of the 3,000 who had been added to the church, the text that we referred to a bit earlier, Acts 2:42, again says they continued steadfastly in prayers. Acts chapter 4, verses 23 through 31, after Peter and John's threat and release by the Sanhedrin, we're told that all the disciples raised their voice to God with one accord, praising God and asking for boldness. Text doesn't use the word prayer there, but the action is obvious. Acts chapter 12 and verse 5, we have a record of Herod killing James, the brother of John, with the sword, and then he takes Peter and imprisons him. But we're told in verse 12 of that chapter that constant prayer was offered to God for him by the church. Paul was constant in prayer. Acts chapter 20, verse 36, Paul concluded his speech to the elders at Ephesus. You recall they gathered down there and met him, and we're told that he knelt down and prayed with them all. Acts 21, verses 4 and 5, as the disciples at Tyre bade farewell to Paul and those traveling with him and warned him not to go to Jerusalem, we're told that he knelt down on the shore and he prayed. The preaching of the Word of God and prayer to God were the very weapons of the early church. Jesus was constant in prayer. Jesus, our supreme example, believed in prayer and he prayed much. Following his baptism in Luke 3:21, it says, "When all the people were when all the people were baptized, it came to pass that Jesus also was baptized. And while he prayed, the heaven was opened and the Holy Spirit descended. And the text continues. Before selecting the 12, we're told that he continued in prayer all night. Luke chapter 6, verses 12 and 13. One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also designated apostles. He retired in solitude on occasions to pray. Matthew 14, verses 22 and 23 says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, and then he goes out to them. In Mark chapter 1, verses 32 through 35, it says, that evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but while he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Luke chapter 5, verses 15 and 16 says, news about him spread all the more so that the crowds of people came to hear him and be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. I'm quite confident that many of our problems, wrong attitudes, behavior issues would vanish if we began following Jesus' habit of prayer. On the night of his betrayal, John chapter 17, a well-known passage, prayer to his Father, dribbled with references to those whom he loved, his followers, while he is on the very verge of facing the most cruel, terrible treatment that humans have known. Chapter 26 of Matthew, verses 36 through 44, just sometime shortly after that prayer in John 17. The text says, Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane, Matthew 26, beginning in verse 36. And he said to the disciples, sit here while I go and pray over there. He took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed. Then he said to them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful even to death. Stay here and watch with me. He went a little farther and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. Then he came to the disciples and found them asleep and said to Peter, what, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again a second time and prayed, O my Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. So he left them, went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then he came to his disciples. Are you still sleeping? Behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is being betrayed into sinners, the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. And we recall how the text continues. His first recorded words from the cross were a short prayer. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do. That's recorded in Luke's account in that way. Paul wrote often in his letters of prayer, Romans chapter 12 and verse 12, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer. Ephesians 6 and verse 18, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit. Philippians 4 verse 6, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God. Colossians 4 verse 2, continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. 1 Thessalonians 5 verse 17, pray without ceasing. Prayer can be abused. We need to pray more. We need to pray better. But prayer can be abused. It can be abused, for example, by thinking that prayer will take the place of doing. Paul received a call to go into Macedonia, for example, in order to help the people there in Acts chapter 16. So what did Paul do? He said, well, I'll pray for you, right? That would have been a good thing to do, but that's not what the text says. The text tells us in chapter 16, verses 10 through 12, after Paul had seen the vision, we, Luke including himself, got ready at once to leave for Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. From Troas we put out to sea and sailed straight for Samothrace, and the next day we went on to Neapolis. From there we traveled to Philippi, a Roman colony and the leading city of the district of Macedonia. Perhaps you can think of James chapter 2 in this regard. Verses 14 through 17, what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, be warm and be well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. Well, what about just saying, go in peace, be warm and be filled, I'll pray for you. Same point could be made. Again, it's a good thing to pray for people. But as James says, faith by itself, and we might say prayer by itself, if it's not accompanied by action, doesn't do a lot of good. Another abuse of prayer is thinking that prayer will cover up for or suffice for a failure to obey God's will, or let's just call it disobedience. Recall in 1 Samuel 15, Saul refused to obey God's command regarding the Amalekites. And when Samuel comes to him in 1 Samuel 15, verses 24 and 25, it says, Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned. Well, he knew that before he did it. I have sinned. I have violated the Lord's command and your instructions. I was afraid of the men, and so I gave in to them. Now I beg you, forgive my sin and come back with me so that I may worship the Lord. The discussion continued, and down in verse 30, Saul says, I have sinned, but please honor me before the elders of my people and before Israel. Come back with me so that I may worship the Lord your God. In all those responses, it seems that Saul is concerned with other things, really, besides his relationship with the Father. Concerned with being honored before the people, being concerned with Samuel's regard for him. Where was his concern before he engaged in this activity? Didn't seem to be any concern at all. Proverbs 28 verse 9 says, one who turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer shall be an abomination. Prayer can be abused by suggesting that God already knows, so why bother praying about it? Matthew 6, verse 8, Jesus says, your Father knows the things you have need of before you even ask him. So why bother? Well, among other things, prayer shows faith. Prayer shows trust in God, confidence in him. Prayer shows humility. Prayer shows that we recognize our dependence on God, shows our confidence that God hears, shows our confidence that God will do what he says, that he will hear, and that he will answer our prayers. Some of you may be familiar with World War II concentration camp survivor Corrie Ten Boom. She once asked, is your prayer your steering wheel? Is prayer your steering wheel? Or is it your spare tire? And that's a good question. Do you pull prayer out only when things go bad? When you got a flat? Or is prayer something that you daily use to help you navigate through life? There are things that we may need to correct regarding our prayer life. We may need to be more specific in prayer, thanking God for the particulars of blessings and other things, confessing actual sins, naming the specific names of those for whom we should pray, praying for definite opportunities to teach others, not just help us reach the lost. Praying for your specific neighbor, for example, or co-worker, or fellow student, or friend of any kind, or family member who you know is lost. Because of denominational errors, some have grown suspicious of any pronounced emphasis on prayer. I recall decades ago, a member who was highly thought of, looked on and considered himself to be a bulwark in the congregation, who had all the credentials, if you will, considered himself, he aspired to be an elder. I remember in class one time he stated that he never prayed. And he argued vehemently that to insist that we needed to pray was to insist that the miraculous element was still available today. And he would accuse you of being of charismatic persuasion if you talked about God answering prayer. We need to learn to commune with God in prayer, not just come with a list. What does that mean, to commune? It's defined as to converse or talk together, usually with profound intensity and intimacy. Also to be in intimate communication or rapport. Leaves the idea of list kind of far behind, doesn't it? You have intimate conversation with somebody, intense conversation with somebody like it's describing here. You usually don't have your list out. Okay, let's talk about this. And let's talk about this, and let's talk about that. James says in chapter 5, verse 16, in the New International Version, the prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. At the risk of sounding like I'm contradicting what I said earlier about specifics in prayer, Gandhi once said, prayer is not asking. Prayer is a longing of the soul. Now, I realize we go to God with different concerns. I understand that. But he's talking about heartfelt prayer here. He's talking about prayer for real issues, perhaps, of imminence, real issues of the heart and the soul. Not that all our issues aren't real, but I'm making a distinction. You know what it's like to go to God in prayer in anguish. contrasting that with going to God in prayer, thanking Him for your food, and neither one is wrong. That's not the point. Prayer is not asking, it is a longing of the soul. It is daily admission of one's weakness. He says it is better in prayer to have a heart without words than to have words without the heart. And I think that last line makes the whole thing worth quoting. Paul Bilheimer, religious author and minister, died in 1984. One of the things he said was, Satan does not care how many people read or study about prayer. Think about that with this lesson tonight. Satan does not care how many people read or study about prayer, or how often we listen to Bible teaching and sermons on prayer, if only he can keep them from praying. Read about it all you want. Study about it all you want. Preach about it all you want. Just don't start actually doing it. Being a Christian is a relationship. If there is no relationship with Christ, if there is no relationship with God, then being a Christian is nothing more than following a set of rules and being in partnership with others who do the same. A relationship demands communication. If there is no give and take communication, there is no relationship. Those who study their Bibles but don't pray are merely trying to follow a rules-based relationship. Jesus quoted this passage from Isaiah, as we recognize it, chapter 56 and verse 7. It tells us that the Lord's house is to be a house of prayer. Not just a house of doing the right things, but a house of prayer. I'm convinced there needs to be a lot more closet Christians as well. Christians who spend time in private prayer. Colossians 4:2, Paul said, continue steadfastly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. F.B. Meyer once said, the greatest tragedy of life is not unanswered prayer, but unoffered prayer. I hope this has encouraged all of us to pray more and to pray more the way that we should pray. Let's stand together and sing the song that's been chosen.